Chaitanya-manavistam stapitam jena uttale sayam upakadamayam jatakti sarapanyantikam manchakaputrubhyascha kibhazanu vaivasa pratitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Preeti Maharaj has been blessed by the instructions of the four Kumaras, and he's thanked them in a very sweet way, understanding that and expressing that how can he reciprocate them through something temporary when they have given him something of eternal value. We talk about reciprocating with something temporary, that means giving something that is, we are going to lose anyway. And yet that eternal, that which has been given, we will never lose. So he expressed his appreciation in a very deep and learned and sweet way. And they were very satisfied. Then, in the end, towards the end of the chapter, chapter 22, Maitreya Muni describes the qualities of Preeti Maharaj and how glorious he was, and he repeated the qualities that he was gifted from the demigods, showing how every potency of everyone, practically speaking, appeared within his person. So now in chapter 23 the mood is going to change. He's been he was brought forth from the dead body of his father Vena, and he had a particular mission to perform, to rule the earth properly and to reestablish sacrifices and to show how the world should be ruled. And he has completed his mission, and now this chapter is entitled, 23 is entitled, Preeti Maharaj, Maharaj Preacher's Going Back Home. Back home means back home, back to Godhead, back to the spiritual world. So there are many instructions in this chapter, and Prabhupada's purports are again quite long. So we'll read quite a few of them. At the last stage of his life, when Preeti Maharaj saw himself getting old, that great soul, who was king of the world, divided whatever opulences he had accumulated amongst all kinds of living entities, moving and non-moving. He arranged pensions for everyone according to religious principles, and after executing the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in complete coordination with him, the Lord, he dedicated his sons unto the earth, which was considered to be his daughter. Then Preeti Maharaj left the presence of his citizens, who were almost lamenting and crying from feeling separation from the king. Such a loving relationship they had with him. Now when a ruler leaves office, you know, everyone is cheering, and you know, I'm happy that he's gone, waiting for the next one somehow or another, with one little teeny bit of hope that they've been able to muster. They're thinking that this next ruler will be able to change things around, but very, very, very difficult. And then, more or less, people are so cynical nowadays, they think nothing's going to change. And in the United States, where voting isn't mandatory, less than 50% of the people vote even. They don't care. In Australia, they have to vote, and everyone thinks she'll be right. But in Australia, in the United States, they don't have to vote and they think things will be wrong, she'll be wrong, so why bother? So the king himself, Pritam Raj, went to the forest alone with his wife to perform austerities. Since there were so many discrepancies during the reign of King Vena, the Lord sent his most confidential devotee, Maharaj Prithu, to settle things. So we heard how he settled them. He got the earth to produce grains for performance of sacrifice. So the people were well fed, everyone was performing their duties properly according to Varnashrama. And the earth, due to the sacrifice, was very opulent. And the earth whom Maharaj Prithu had threatened to kill with a bow and arrow for not providing food for the citizens, but was now considered his daughter. He cared for the earth like a daughter, as a father cares for the daughter with such affection. So after executing the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because he's a Shaktivesha avatar, the Lord's potency for ruling has entered into him. And after settling the affairs of the world, Maharaj Prithu was ready to retire. He had been exemplary in his government administration, and now he was to become exemplary in his retirement. He divided all this property amongst his sons and appointed them to rule the world. And then he went to the forest with his wife. It is significant in this connection that it is said that Maharaj Prithu retired alone, and at the same time he took his wife with him. According to Vedic principles, when retiring from family life, one can take his wife with him, for the husband and wife are considered to be one unit. Thus they can both combinedly perform austerities for liberation. This is the path that Maharaj Prithu, who was an exemplary character, followed. And this is also the way of Vedic civilization. One should simply not remain at home until the time of death. But one should separate from family life at a timely moment and prepare himself to go back to Godhead. One of the main differences between the Vedic culture and a materialistic culture, that in the Vedic culture, people acknowledged death. They did not try to either hide it or run from it or cure it. In contemporary civilization, people are trying to cure death, that thing that will somehow or another keep us away from the shopping malls. It's so horrible. So it's like a problem that death is sort of a problem to go around, to somehow in the future remove. But it's impossible to stop the body from dying. So much research is done into aging and why does the body age? Why doesn't it, won't it live forever? The very nature of the material world is that it's wound down. It winds down. It has a particular amount of energy and it winds down. But not accepting that, the scientists claim that they will solve this nasty problem of death. So in the Vedic culture, very different from contemporary culture, death is paraded through the streets. You see people dying, the bodies being carried to the crematorium every day in a village, practically speaking, in a big village in Jagannath Puri in Vrindavan. Happens all the time. And you go sometimes to a funeral, and instead of dressing up the body and putting makeup on him so he looks like he's sleeping peacefully, rather they burn the body before your very eyes. So there's something called samasa vairagya, which means that when you see the body burning at the crematorium, at the place of crematorium, you get a very deep realization that leaves. But you get a very deep realization, and renunciation takes place in the heart. But it leaves again after a few hours or a day or so. And what is that realization? That I too will be in that situation. My body is going to burn. And you're wondering, the body, you see that the flames in Vrindavan, they put ghee on the body, and then they have wood underneath it, and they put the body on top, and everyone chants, and then they light it, and you start thinking that this person that I knew, he's not trying to get off the fire. You know, it must be very hot. You think, why? And then there's this crackling sounds, and you could smell the flesh. And that person actually has been gone a long time ago. The person who is beloved. So, this is the difference. The Vedic culture doesn't try to avoid or hide death. Rather, it tries to prepare for death. How? By detaching oneself from matter. When? At least by the end of one's life. Ideally, one gets trained early in one's life, then doesn't get completely entangled in materialism and material attachments. Then he can leave those things and prepare for what's going to happen. It's intelligent to prepare for what's going to happen. And how to prepare? Material detachment, spiritual attachment, spiritual realization. So how? After a life of enjoyment, enjoying the senses, don't stay at home is the principle, but leave home, because home means comfort. You've organized things for comfort. Your favorite chair, you know, the food is there when you want it, it's hot, this and that, you don't like this vegetable, you like that vegetable, you can organize things, so everything is, the light is placed there, so all you have to do is move your arm and turn it, or you have your remote for doing this and that, turning on it. Someone's house I visited recently, I can't remember whose it was, but sort of had 6 or 7 remotes there. It's hard to imagine what he was turning on and off. But no, it's not going to work. So one leaves and gets away from comfort. And then vanaprastha means that one performs austerities. Household brahmacharya life is meant for learning, for study. Household life is meant for charity. Vanaprastha is meant for austerities and sannyas for preaching. So austerities, why? To break the nasty habit of the mind. To break the nasty habits of the mind that everything is comfortable, is meant to be organized around my comfort, austerity. So he retired, and he took his wife with him. And both they combinedly perform austerities for liberation. This is the path of Maharaj Prithu, who is an exemplary character that he followed. And this is also the way of Vedic civilization. One should not simply remain home until the time of death, but should separate from family life at a timely moment and prepare himself to go back to Godhead. There's a Shaktivesh incarnation of God who had actually come from Vaikuntha as a representative of Krishna. Prithviraj was certain to go back to Godhead. Nevertheless, in order to set the example in all ways, he also underwent severe austerities in the Tapovan. What does Tapovan mean? Yes, the forest. Van means forest. Tapovan, the forest in which one performs austerities. It appears that in those days there were many tapovans. There are many places called tapovan. Actually, above Gomukh, Gangotri, there's a tapovan. There's so many. It appears Indeed, it was compulsory for everyone to go to Tapavan to fully accept the shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for it is very difficult to retire from family life and at the same time remain at home. And when you're at home, it's very difficult to not organize things around your pleasure. And when you're living in the forest, it is very difficult to organize things around your pleasure. So, go to the forest. So after retiring from family life, text 4, Maharaj Pitu strictly followed the regulations of retired life and underwent severe austerities in the forest. He engaged in these activities as seriously as he had formerly engaged in leading the government and conquering everyone. So it was very, very serious. That same determination that he had used in his life, he was now applying to detach himself from any material enjoyment, to set an example. Purport. We'll read some of quite a few purports. As it is necessary for one to become very active in family life, why does one have to become active in family life? You have to make money, you have to take care of this, you have to act responsibly, make sure things are organized properly. So it takes activity. Similarly, after retirement from family life, it is necessary to control the mind and senses. This is possible when one engages himself fully in the devotional service of the Lord. Actually, the whole purpose of the Vedic system, the Vedic social order, is to enable one to ultimately return home back to Godhead. The Grihastha ashram is a sort of concession, combining sense gratification with a regulative life. It is to enable one to easily retire in the middle of life and engage fully in austerities in order to transcend material sense gratification once and for all. Therefore, in the vanaprastha stage of life, tapasya or austerity is strongly recommended. 5, text 5. In the tapovan, so what did he do there? Maharaj Pitu, this is what his practice is, sometimes ate the trunks and roots of trees. And sometimes he ate fruit and dried leaves, whatever was available. That's what he, whatever was provided simply and naturally by Krishna. Ate trunks of trees, the fibrous trunks of trees and the roots of trees. Sometimes he ate fruits and dry leaves. Why would someone eat dry leaves with no sugar or milk poured on them or anything? Try it and see if you like it. Huh? Yeah. You think he was worrying about purifying his blood at this point? Huh? Yeah, there's nothing else. That's when he dry leaves. There's nothing else. And for some weeks he drank only water. Finally, he lived simply by breathing air. Yuga Maharaj performed these type of austerities too. Just to minimize. Purport. We're going to read the entire purport. Not very long. But there's such interesting and powerful points. And after we hear these interesting and powerful points, then very soon we're going to hear some very strong points on renunciation to bring some, allow renunciation to dawn within our hearts in the stories of Paramjan and Prachini Bharaja. So, we've heard his eating. In Bhagavad Gita, yogis are advised to go to a secluded place in the forest and live alone in a sanctified spot there. By Pritu Maharaja's behavior, we can understand that when he went to the forest, he did not eat any cooked food sent from the city by some devotees or disciples. As soon as one takes a vow to live in the forest, he must simply eat roots, tree trunk, fruits, dried leaves, whatever nature provides in that way. Pritu Maharaja strictly adopted these principles for living in the forest, and sometimes he ate nothing but dry leaves and drank nothing but a little water. Sometimes he lived on nothing but air, and sometimes he ate some fruit from the trees. In this way he lived in the forest and underwent severe austerities, especially in regard to eating. In other words, overeating is not at all recommended for one who wants to progress in spiritual life. Srila Rupa Goswami also warns that too much eating and too much endeavor, atyahara priyastascha, are against the principles by which one can advance in spiritual life. It is also notable, so we're reading this, and perhaps we're thinking, maybe I'm supposed to go to the forest and eat only leaves to become purified, breathe air, and not do anything else. Not eat anything else. Eat the roots of trees and the fruits that they produce. It is also notable that according to Vedic injunctions, to live in the forest is to live in the mode of complete goodness, whereas to live in the city is to live in the mode of passion. And to live in a brothel or drinking house is to live in the mode of ignorance. However, to live in a temple is to live in Vaikuntha, which is transcendental to all the modes of material nature. This Krishna consciousness movement affords one the opportunity to live in the temple of the Lord, which is as good as Vaikuntha. Consequently, a Krishna conscious person does not need to go to the forest and artificially try to imitate Prithu Maharaj. Or the great sages and munis who used to live in the forest. So people actually did this, but those people were not like us people. Srila Rupa Goswami, after retiring from his minister's seat in the government, went to Vrindavan and lived beneath a tree like Maharaj Prithu. Since then, many people have gone to Vrindavan to imitate Rupa Goswami's behavior. Instead of advancing in spiritual life, many have fallen into material habits, and even in Vrindavan have become victims of illicit sex, gambling, and intoxication. So one should not try to imitate. One should get directions, instructions that are suitable for himself, and not think, well, Prithu Maharaj did this, and he's instructing us, teaching us by example, so therefore I should do it. Or Rupa Goswami did this. No, we have to understand who we are and what our capacity is. If we try to imitate, we will get into so much trouble. The Krishna consciousness movement has been introduced in the Western countries. But it is not possible for Westerners to go to the forest and practice the severe austerities which were ideally practiced by Prithu Maharaj or Rupa Goswami. However, Westerners or anyone else can follow in the footsteps of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur by living in a temple, which is transcendental to residence in a forest, and to vow to accept Krishna Prasadam and nothing else, to follow the regulative principles and chant 16 rounds daily of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. In this way, one's spiritual life will never be disturbed. So the updating, practical updating of that instruction is to live in the temple. When I was in India last, I was speaking with Radhanath Swami, and there was one, I can't remember his name. I almost can't remember his name, but one devotee who lived in Pakistan, and he was a big businessman in Pakistan. And then I think at some point he moved into the Tripati temple because his life was, he retired, and he moved into the temple very ideally, acting very ideally, and he lived with the brahmacharis, and he was so humble and never complained about anything, and served everyone very, very sweetly. And then he had some disease, and then he died chanting Krishna's name. So he told the story very wonderfully. But very, very ideal, exemplary ideal, like Prithu Maharaj, but updated according to the practical capacities in this day and age. And he was always chanting. Text 6. Following the principles of forest life, Prithu Maharaj went to the forest. And living, and following the footsteps, following the principles of forest life and the footsteps of the great sages and munis, Prithu Maharaj accepted five kinds of heating processes during the summer season. He exposed himself to torrents of rain in the rainy season. In the winter, stood in water up to his neck, cold water. He also used to simply lie down on the floor to sleep on the forest floor. So such incredible austerities. So these austerities are what? Meant to break the attachments that the mind has developed over the years, because these attachments, if we follow the mind's inclinations, where will they lead us? Where will it lead us into our next life when this body does drop? So the principle again is of austerity is to break the mind's natural tendency for material sense enjoyment and to increase the positive, the attachment to Krishna. So this is what he did. Prabhupada's purport explains in a little more detail the austerities that he performed. Now, the first we heard about was his eating. So no pleasure of the senses of the tongue. And here the rest of the austerities were some more. These are some of the austerities executed by jnanis and yogis who cannot accept the process of bhakti yoga. They must undergo such severe types of austerities in order to become purified from material contamination. Panchatapa refers to five kinds of heating processes. One is enjoined, so the mind does not like excessive heat. So how am I going to break that my mind's attachment to that so I can focus my mind on Krishna? Because we can see when the mind is, when it's too hot, all you can think of, oh, it's so hot, it's so hot, and it's so hard to think of Krishna. So this is a material, non-devotional bhakti way to neglect the mind. So this is what they do. One is enjoined to sit within a circle of fire with flames blazing from four sides and the sun blazing directly overhead. That's in the summer. This is one kind of panchatapa recommended for austerity. Similarly, in the rainy season, what's the natural inclination? Get out of the rain somehow or another. But one is enjoined to expose himself in torrents of rain. And in winter, to sit in cold water up to the neck. As far as bedding is concerned, the ascetic should be content with simply lying on the floor. And the floor means the forest floor. Or some little kuti or hut or something. The purpose for undergoing such severe austerities is to become a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, as explained in the next verse. So in the next verse, text 7, Titiksha yatta vagdanta udvarita jatanila ariradha yeshu krishnam acharatappa uttamam. Titiksha means tolerating. Titiksha yatta vagdanta, tolerating, controlling, vak, yantavak, controlling one's words, what one says. So tolerating everything that happens and controlling one's words, danta, controlling the senses, van vashan danta kuru all the time. Udvarita, without discharge of sense. Jita anila, controlling the life air through yoga, everything, control, letting nothing depend on what I feel like doing. Because the feeling like is dependent on the mind. This is the process of austerities. And no one can do this. Of course, people can do it and then die very quickly or give up after 15 minutes or a day. But what's the purpose of it? Ari radya yeshu, simply desiring. Ari radya simply desiring Krishnam, Krishna, to neglect what the mind is ordering so loudly, and which means the satisfaction of the senses, and completely desiring Krishna, akshara tapa uttama. So one should practice this best of all austerities, completely desiring Krishna. So here's Prabhupada's translation, and then we'll read some of the purport. Maharaj Prithu underwent all these severe austerities in order to control his words and his senses, to refrain from discharging his semen, and to control his life, the life air within his body. All this he did, why? For the satisfaction of Krishna. He had no other purpose. So to please Krishna, he had performed sacrifices like a person acting in Karma Kanda as the king, and now he was acting as a Gyanakandi according to the instructions of continuing on after hearing what the four Kumaras said. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Very important instructions. In Kali Yuga, the following is recommended. Harir Nama, Harir Nama, Harir Nama, Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gatyanyata. In order to be recognized by Krishna, because ultimately Prithu Maharaj was trying to satisfy Krishna, in order to be recognized by Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one should chant the holy name of the Lord continuously, 24 hours a day. Unfortunate persons who cannot accept this formula prefer to execute some type of pseudo-meditation without accepting the other processes of austerity. The fact is, however, that one must accept either the severe method of austerity described above to become purified, or take to the process of devotional service recommended for pleasing the Supreme Lord Krishna. The person who is Krishna conscious is most intelligent, because in Kali Yuga it is not at all possible to undergo such severe austerities. We need only follow great personalities like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In his Shikastak, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wrote, Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. All glories to the holy names of Lord Krishna, which from the very beginning purify the heart and immediately liberate one. Bhava Mahadavatni Navaparam. If the real purpose of all yoga is to please Lord Krishna, then this simple bhakti yoga system recommended for this age is sufficient. It is necessary, however, to engage constantly in the service of the Lord. Although Prithu Maharaj executed his austerities long before the appearance of Lord Krishna on this planet, his purpose was still to please Krishna. And later on in the purport. We should therefore not be discouraged just because we cannot go to the forest to practice severe austerities. Our life is so short that we must strictly adhere to the principles laid down by the Vaishnava charges and peacefully execute Krishna consciousness. There is no need to become despondent. Narottama Das Thakur recommends, Anande Barohari Bhajavindavan Sri Guru Vaishnava Pade Manjayaman. For a transcendental blissful life, chant the Hare Krishna mantra. Come worship the holy place of Vrindavan and always engage in the service of the Lord, of the spiritual master, and of the Vaishnavas. This Krishna consciousness movement is therefore very safe and easy. We have only to execute the order of the Lord and fully surrender unto Him. We have only to execute the order of the spiritual master, preach Krishna consciousness, and follow in the path of the Vaishnavas. The spiritual master represents both Lord Krishna and the Vaishnavas. Thereby, by following the instructions of the spiritual master and by chanting Hare Krishna, everything will be all right. So there is no need to be despondent, there is no need to go to the forest, but there is a need to chant Hare Krishna and follow the instructions that Prabhupada is giving us here. Text 8. By thus practicing severe austerities, Prithu Maharaj gradually became steadfast in spiritual life and completely free of all desires for fruitive activities. He also practiced breathing exercises to control his mind and senses. And by such control, he became completely free from all desires for fruitive activity. So, there are different processes in yoga. And Prithu Maharaj was an expert yogi, beginning with Yam Niyam. And this is to purify the mind, beginning with following the rules and regulations. And then when one does that, then practice the asanas, or the physical postures that will make the body healthy enough to go to the next stage, healthy enough and to go to the next stage. Because when the body is unhealthy, and if one is practicing yoga, one cannot do it. One cannot do it. So the asanas help the body become healthy. And also, when the body is healthy, then one can practice the breathing exercises. So the breathing exercises are meant for what purpose? To control the mind. And what is the purpose of controlling the mind? To withdraw it from sense gratification with the purpose of focusing it on Krishna. So Prithu Maharaj began to practice pranayama, or the mechanical practices or process of controlling the mind through controlling the breath. So Prabhupada explains, we'll read some of the purport. As far as pranayama is concerned, chanting of the holy name of the Lord and dancing in ecstasy are also considered pranayama. There you go. In a previous verse, Sanat Kumar instructed Prithu Maharaj Prithu to engage constantly in the service of the Supreme Lord Vasudeva. Yad parapankija palasa vilasa vilasa vakya kama sayam grantitam udgrantayanti shanta. Only by worshipping Vasudeva can one become free from the desires of fruitive activities. Outside of worshipping Vasudeva, the yogis and jnanis cannot attain freedom from such desires. So that verse was text 39 of the previous chapter. Yad-pāra-pankaja-palasa-vilasa-vilasa-vaktya kāma-śayān-gantititam-udgantayanti-śanta tadvannarikta matayo yatayo pirudha shoto ganastam maranam bhajavasudevam. The devotees who are always engaged in the service of the toes of the lotus feet of the Lord can very easily overcome the heart nutted desire for fruitive activities, because this is what must be broken at the end of one's life, the desire to act in such a way that I'm going to get some pleasure from it. Because that mood or that tendency will guarantee that one will take another birth within the material world. So the purpose of practicing yoga, of life itself, is to get out of this samsara dava, this governor, this forest fire, this blazing, painful forest fire of material existence. That's the purpose of our life, human life. So the process of the four Kumaras, who are the gurus of the jnanis, they're saying that it is very difficult to break this tendency for a soul in the material world, condition in the material world, to break the tendency for fruitive activity. Very difficult. But if one is always engaged in the lotus feet of, in the service of the lotus feet of the Lord, yet parapankija palasa vilasa vilasa bhaktiya, then one can very easily overcome this hard-nutted desire for fruitive activities. But then on the other side, about the jnanis, tadvannarikta matayo yatayo pirudha shoto ganastam maranam bhajavasudevam. The jnanis cannot do that. They cannot free themselves so easily, or at all, practically speaking. So therefore, Vaja Vasudeva, this is the conclusion, basically, of the prayers of the Kumaras, and cross over this ocean of death, so hard to cross over the ocean of material life, by taking shelter of the boat of his lotus feet, of Vasudeva's lotus feet. Vasudeva means the son of Vasudeva. This is Krishna. So Prabhupada continues in his purport. Here the word pranayama does not refer to any ulterior motive. The actual aim is to strengthen the mind. That is the purpose of pranayama. And senses. In order, why? To engage them in devotional service. Because one's mind has to be very strong and fixed. Because there are so many allurements and temptations that come our way. So the actual aim, again, even of the pranayama, is to strengthen the mind and senses in order to engage them in devotional service. In the present age, this determination can be very easily acquired simply by chanting the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. But the catch is that you can't stop. Because Maya, as soon as one, then it's very easy. If one only will do this, just always chant Hare Krishna. Because it's like saying that all we have to do to keep the darkness out is to keep the light on. But the light always has to be on. So the moment the light is turned off, the darkness immediately, stealthily creeps in the room. So similarly, if we keep the light, Krishna Suryasam Maya Haya Andhakara, keep the light of the Krishna sun always risen in our heart by chanting Hare Krishna, then the darkness, the Andhakara, the darkness of Maya can end. Text 9. Sanat Kumarao Bhagavan Ya Aha Janikam Param Yogam Tanaiva Purusham Abhasat Purushar Shava. Sanat Kumar, this is text 9, Bhagavan, the most powerful Sanat Kumar, Yat Aha, he said, what he said, Prithu Maharaj followed very, very, very carefully. And by that, Yogam Tanaiva Purusham, he made spiritual advancement in his life, and he worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Abhajat Purusharthava, the best of Purushas, of persons, of human beings, of males, the Supreme Lord. So Sanat Kumar's instructions were meant to bring him, because impersonalists may interpret Sanat Kumar's instructions to that one practices devotional service, but ultimately one's goal is to merge. But is that what Prithu Maharaj is doing? No, he's taking full shelter of Krishnam and the Abhajat Purusharthava, he's taking full shelter of that Supreme Personality of Godhead. So thus, the best amongst human beings, Prithu Maharaj, followed that path of spiritual advancement which was advised by Sanat Kumar. That is to say, he worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So read some of this purport. Actually, one who is self-realized engages himself in the service of the Lord perpetually, both in this life and in the next. Indeed, for devotees, there is no difference between this life and the next. In this life, a neophyte devotee is trained to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in the next life, he approaches that Supreme Person in Vaikuntha and renders the same devotional service. Even for the neophyte devotee, devotional service is considered Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. Devotional service to the Lord is never considered a material activity. Since he is acting on the Brahma-Bhuta platform, a devotee is already liberated. He therefore has no need to practice any other type of yoga in order to approach the Brahma-Bhuta stage. If the devotee adheres strictly to the orders of the spiritual master, follows the rules and regulations, and chants the Hare Krishna mantra, it should be concluded that he is already at the Brahma-Bhuta stage, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Mam chayo vivacharena bhakti yogena sevate saganam samatityaktam brahmabhuyaya kalpate mam chayo avyabhicharena means that if one continuously bhakti yogena sevate does devotional service to me, Krishna says, continuously, because bhakti yoga is transcendental, then saganam samatityaktam, one will go beyond, above the modes of material nature and come to the Brahma-Bhuya platform. And then one serves on that platform, serves Krishna as a devotee. Text 10. Bhagavata mina sadho shraddhaya yatata sada bhakti bhagavati pramani ananya visaya bhavat. Maharaj Prithu thus engaged completely in devotional service, executing the rules and regulations according to principles, strictly according to principles, 24 hours daily. Thus his love and devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, developed and became unflinching and fixed. So he was never a worshipper of the Brahman. I want you to not think in that way. The word is Brahmani, which means it can mean the impersonalists will interpret one other way, that he worshipped ultimately for the purpose of achieving Brahman. But Brahmani means also the origin of the impersonal Brahman. So the verse clearly explains Bhagavat Dhamina Sato, that he's executing Bhagavat Dharma, or devotional service. That means when one is executing devotional service of Bhagavat Dharma, it means that one is acting for Krishna's pleasure. That is what devotional service means. So there is no pretension involved, Prabhupada explains in his purport. That by definition it means if you're acting for Krishna's pleasure, there's no pretension, thinking as if one is going to serve Krishna for the purpose of merging with Brahman. That is the definition of pretension. Because there is no bhakti, there is no love there. Because you're going beyond that object that you're loving. It's like serving your boss to get his job or something like that, to ultimately replace him and become the boss. There is no true serving mood towards the boss. There's nothing but ambition that's motivating one. There's no love, dedication, dutifulness. There's ambition. No, there's pretension. The service is not service, it's pretension. Self-service. So, Bhagavat Dhamina Sado. So the devotee, he's executing, Prithu Maharaj executed Bhagavat Dharma, not Kaitava Dharma, not cheating, pretentious Dharma. Shraddhaya Yatata Sadha, with faith, he was endeavoring Sada always, Bhaktir Bhagavati Brahmani. He was endeavoring to please that Supreme Personality of Godhead with great devotion, that Supreme Lord, who is the only word that fits here, the Brahmani has to be translated, who is the origin of the impersonal Brahman. Ananya
Vishaya,
firmly fixed without deviation, and he became that firmly fixed. So he can't have been doing all that devotion to become God, to merge in with him, because then there's no devotion. There's only ambition and pretension. So Prabhupada explains this in this case. So the next couplet and verse is long. So it would have been nice if we wanted to get up to 12, but we leave that. So we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments?
Yeah. It's quite mysterious. It seems like some practice of liberation of devotion in both Buddhist practice.
That there's what?
Some evolution of devotion through this austerities and yoga. But obviously, he was already.
Yeah, that will be explained in a. Prabhupada will explain that clearly in a purport. Yeah, that will come up. All these points come up. Why is he doing this? Why didn't he? He's a great devotee. Why is he practicing? And then later on, he's going to practice yoga and leave his body through yoga. So he's showing what's really going on is the yoga ladder is being demonstrated. When Prithu Maharaj was preaching to his citizens, he was talking about karma. And the purpose of karma is to focus the mind on the Lord. And karma can be used, work can be used, activities can be used as a sadhana to bring us to the point of devotion. And that's actually the purpose of karma. Vedic sacrifices, etc. Then with the Kumaras again are the gurus of the Jnanis. So after hearing about karmas can be used as a stepping stone towards the ultimate goal on the yoga ladder of bhakti, so jnana can also be used simultaneously, similarly. So there were verses in there that were very jnani-like about separating the body and through knowledge burning the off one's activity. So jnana similarly can be used as a stepping stone towards the ultimate point of yoga, of devotional service of Bhagavad Dhamma. So here, the third in the processes of yoga is demonstrated in that way, to show that yoga's purpose is only really as a stepping stone, a sadhana, towards the ultimate bhakti. And then when karma is so intricate and you can't perform that, and jnana, you can't, it's so intricate and you can't perform that. And yoga, this is the austerities you have to do if you want to practice yoga, so intricate you can perform that. And the goal of all these is bhakti. So therefore the natural conclusion that an intelligent person will come to is that why bother with any of them when I perform bhakti only? So that is really what the message is. So he's setting an example. In this way, he's gone through all three stages, and ultimately, because remember, this is Canto 4, we won't be getting these instructions in Canto 10, or even in Canto 7, or even in Canto 6. But here in Canto 4, we're getting these instructions to get it strongly clear in our consciousness that the purpose of all types of yoga, the entirety of the Vedic culture, which is based on karma, jnana, and bhakti, based on the Vedic literatures, is ultimately bhakti. Vedes chasava ahameva vidyo. So it's very interesting in that sense. So ultimately, these instructions are meant to lead us in a focused manner to the lotus feet of Krishna and Vrindavan, but taking it step by step. in a step-by-step fashion. Yep. The non-moving living entities. What kind? Huh? Well, what's a non-moving living entity? Huh? So, you don't certainly give them your money. You can give them your water. That's all I can think of. Your opulence of water. You don't give them your royal scepter and the throne. You distribute that to your sons. Everyone gets distributed to according to their needs, requirements. I also was wondering about that. But he did the right thing for everyone. Prabhupada didn't mention that in his purport. Didn't mention that. He just mentioned that he gave everything to, passed on everything to his sons. Any other questions? Yep.
Somebody, I sense that all the Leela in this creature, everything is just in the energy, may not be wishing to service. Can you engage yourself to do it?
That's the Abhideya Tattva. That's the practice. Because based on Sambandha, the knowledge of who we are and all this knowledge, then one does that to get the goal of prayojan, or the true necessity for the living entity, which is prema pramottama. So this is the only way. There's a, Vedanta Sutra says, I won't be able to say it, and maybe the fourth sutra, Tatu Samatvayam, something like that. That the entirety of the Vedas can only be consistently understood when you understand the principle of Vishnu as being the goal. That is the only, that is the point. If you understand this point, how everything in the Vedas leads to Vishnu, then you can have a consistency in your understanding of everything. But if you take something else, you won't be, there'll be contradictions. So yes, is the answer to that. Yes, Vedas chasavara hameva vidyo. Any other questions or comments? Okay, let's stop here. So tomorrow we won't. Discussing Srimad Bhagavatam, we'll be discussing the glories of Lord Nityananda. What's the schedule tomorrow? Abhishek at 5. It's on the notice board. So why do we call it a notice board? You're supposed to notice it. What's on there? Yeah? So everyone should notice, take note of. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.